Serial Killing, a podcast, is researched, written, produced, and hosted by me, Alyssa Carroll. This is an independent production, no network, no contracts, and I need your support. Please subscribe, follow on my socials linked below, or go to my Patreon to show your support. Thank you so much.
Hi, listeners. I'm Vanessa Richardson, host of the podcast Serial Killers. Like many of you, I'm fascinated by the darker side of humanity. What causes someone to develop such deadly desires and why they decide to act on them? For the past 6 years, I've been able to explore these curiosities weekly, tapping into the mental states of the world's most notorious killers, examining their backgrounds and habits, searching for answers. If you haven't had a chance to check out our show, there's truly no better time to dive in. With hundreds of episodes to binge and new ones released weekly, Serial Killers is the perfect podcast for any avid true crime fan. Follow Serial Killers on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts.
From about 15 years on up, great deal of my thoughts were basically unshareable.
We are all evil in some form or another. Yes, I am evil. Not 100%, but I am evil.
My mother was a sick, angry, hungry, and very sad woman. I hated her, but I wanted to love my mother.
This is Serial Killing, a podcast.
Hello again, and welcome to Serial Killing, a podcast, where we go through the life stories of serial killers to see if we might catch a glimpse of why they displayed their famous, vile, and disturbing behaviors. Special thanks to my patrons who voted for this episode and who get early access to each podcast, so thank you so much. You are truly appreciated. Today's podcast was voted for by patrons and will be on the Beast of Birkinshaw, Peter Manuel. So Peter Thomas Anthony Manuel was born on March 15th, 1927 in New York City. So let's get into some history for that time. The outside environment and happenings can and do affect the mother during pregnancy, which is why I talk about this, because I like to look at every possible angle. So in 1927, the official ceremony for the opening of the Peace Bridge connecting Canada to the United States was held. Located just a few miles away from Niagara Falls, the bridge spanned 5,800 feet across the Niagara River and connected Buffalo, New York in the United States to Fort Erie, Ontario in Canada. Construction on the three-lane bridge began in 1925 with a budget of $4.5 million. By March, the bridge was completed, and in June, it was open to the public prior to its official dedication. An earthquake measuring 8.6 on the Richter scale hit northern central China, killing 200,000 people. It was one of the 10 most deadly earthquakes in history. Also, in 1927, Joseph Stalin took control of Russia. Leon Trotsky was expelled from the Communist Party, and Joseph Stalin took control. Trotsky was deported from the Soviet Union in February of 1929, taken in by Mexico in 1937. He wrote a number of books while in exile criticizing Stalinism. Trotsky was assassinated in Mexico by a Soviet agent, March 13, 1940. But the point is that in 1927, Stalin took control. We also had a small movie theater fire in Montreal, Canada. 800 children were watching an afternoon matinee movie called Get 'em Young. 78 children died in the tragedy. 12 were crushed, 64 asphyxiated, and only 2 died from the actual fire itself. In Germany, the silent film Metropolis was released. It quickly became a cult classic in silent film. The science fiction film's plot revolves around a futuristic utopian city where all was not, as it seemed, directed by Fritz Lang. The movie was not well received with critics at the time, and H.G. Wells, who was master of science fiction writing, right, we've all heard of him, wrote a long and cutting negative review of the film a few months after its release. The film has since gained a cult following and may now be considered kind of cutting-edge film for the time that it was created. In the UK, in 1927, there was an influenza epidemic with 1,000 people dying a week. In the United States, the Great Mississippi Flood affected 700,000 people in the greatest national disaster in U.S. history. Heavy rain began in the late summer, a year before, in 1926. So on April 15th, 15 inches of rain fell in just 18 hours. The Mississippi River broke out of its levee system at 145 locations. So I live not too far from the Mississippi River, and I'm here to tell you, if you don't live near it, you grossly underestimate the size and power of that river. It is crazy. We're always watching the Mississippi River. But I digress. Water flooded an area of 27,000 square miles. States affected included Arkansas, Illinois, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Tennessee, Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas. Worst affected was Arkansas. 14% of the state was flooded. Following the disaster, the Flood Control Act of 1928 created the world's longest system of levees. We still have to watch that Mississippi River. So in the United States, people began on Mount Rushmore. So the sculptures of four U.S. presidents were carved into Mount Rushmore: George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Theodore Roosevelt, and Abraham Lincoln. Work completed on October 31st, 1941. Oh, on Halloween. Now, I have been there once on my way to Yellowstone, and it is impressive, to be sure. It really wasn't what I was expecting. I mean, it's worth seeing if you're, you know, within a acceptable driving distance, but I mean, it's impressive, I suppose, but anyway, moving on. Also in 1927, in the United States, Henry Ford revealed the Ford Motor Company's newest vehicle, a Model A. In May of that year, Ford announced that all production of their famous Model T had ended and that all factories would be dedicated to creating a more innovative and exciting vehicle, ranging in price from $500 to $1,200, but keep in mind this was 100 years ago. The Model A debuted with seven different body types and was available in four different colors. It was also the first to feature the iconic blue oval logo badge, if you're familiar with Ford. They reportedly sold over 400,000 vehicles in the first 2 weeks after its debut. I don't doubt it. So this was the atmosphere that Peter was born into. His parents were Samuel Manuel and Bridget Green Manuel. Samuel was born in 1901 in Hamilton, South Lanarkshire, Scotland, which is kind of southeast of Glasgow. Apologies to the Scottish people for my pronunciation. Bridget was born in 1903, not far from Hamilton. Their first child was a son, James, born in 1923 in Scotland to this young couple. And then at some point after James was born, the couple decided to uproot and immigrate to the United States. Word around the campfire is that the world was at the very kind of beginnings of what would become the Great Depression, and Peter's parents decided to, or it seems like they decided to get a head start, if you will, you know, move over to New York City, make a go of it in the new world, you know. But after the move, Peter was then born in Manhattan, New York. Now, I couldn't really find how long they were in New York, but they tried to settle in Detroit, Michigan after. Samuel worked in a car factory. Bridget worked as a domestic servant. And things were okay-ish until Samuel became sick and couldn't work, and Bridget wanted to be closer to her family to help with things. So I couldn't find what he was ill with, but they were facing absolute poverty, so I read. So they packed up and went back to Scotland, They went back home. So Peter began school at Park St. Roman Catholic School, but he had already the beginnings of an American accent. And it was said that he was bullied because of that, which is unfortunate. And then a little sister, Teresa, was born in North Lanarkshire in 1934. Peter was 7 years old when she was born. So by the age of 10, so 3 years, he had already earned quite the reputation for being a petty thief. But again, the family was having a difficult time financially, so they again moved from Scotland all the way down to Coventry, England, which is southeast of Birmingham. Now, Google says that that's nearly a 5-hour drive south. So for those of us in the U.S., we don't think too much about a 5-hour drive, but for the folks across the pond, that is a very long way for them. And Peter was 11 years old at this point, and his first real brush with the law was in 1938 when he broke into a chapel and stole the offertory box, or the money box. And due to his rather unruly behavior, he was sent to a boarding school for boys that had disciplinary problems, right? But the school was not able to keep him under control. He kept running away. He was put into another boarding school and he'd run away again. He was never really out of trouble for the next few years and was a regular inmate of the Borstals, which is an English reformatory youth system and approved schools. So Peter's juvenile probation officer stated that Peter had the absolute worst criminal record for a juvenile that he had ever personally seen. Not long after, Peter was finally arrested for shoplifting, breaking and entering, and larceny. At just 14 years old, he had a rather impressive record. And at just 15 years old, Peter decided to break into one of his teacher's houses, attacking the teacher's wife. He bludgeoned her in the head with a hammer, although some sources said it was some kind of wrought iron thing. But regardless, he bludgeoned her in her head. He then attempted to sexually assault her, stripped her, he dragged her out into the woods, and he hurt her so badly, ultimately, that she needed stitches. There were other known sexual assaults as well. So he fled after attacking the teacher's wife and hid in a nativity scene for most of the day until he was found and he was arrested. He pleaded guilty to robbery with violence. So he was sent to a Borstal, which again is a type of juvenile detention center in the UK. Their primary focus was to reform seriously disturbed young people. And it was about this time that his parents moved back to Lanarkshire after they lost their home to the bombing of Coventry by the German Air Force in late 1940. So keep in mind what time, what era this was, right? Because it really says something that he was also acting out like this during World War II when most people were terrified. But something else very important happened at that time as well, okay? So sources said that Peter was struck on the right side of his forehead by a piece of steel from an air raid bomb attack. He was knocked unconscious for a few hours and was, quote, blank-minded for a few days, or feeling very outside of himself, very confused, not plugged in. Then not long after, he suffered an electric shock from his job that resulted in the loss of consciousness as well as burns. 3 co-workers died in this incident. Peter had memory problems in the years after this incident, too. Yikes. And it was in this sort of juvenile prison setting that Peter finished out his childhood. There's not a lot of very detailed information, right, about his childhood, but we have some things that we can look at. So let's do it. Now, I couldn't find anything very specific when it came to his parents and their personalities, their marriage, their backgrounds. I found it interesting that they were trying to stay ahead of the Great Depression by moving from Scotland to the U.S. I feel like that would have taken a level of bravery to leave everything you've ever known and move to a completely foreign country and start entirely over. Not to mention they already had one child, and if she wasn't pregnant with Peter when they moved, it was shortly after. Okay, so that's a lot of stress. But move they did. Peter was born in the U.S. when both of his siblings and his parents were all born in Scotland. How might that have made him feel, guys? Though his parents and brother would have used the dialects and accents of their local area in Scotland, and then later his little sister, Peter would have only heard American English outside of the home in his early years, these very formative years where he's learning how to talk. So yeah, that would have altered his accent a bit. I mean, we emulate what we hear. You know, I know that I work to get rid of my kind of hick, southern, Midwestern accent, but most people just learn to speak the same as what they are exposed to. Now, the family uprooted a few times. We know Peter was born in New York, but the family uprooted and moved to Detroit, Motor City, to work for a car manufacturer like so many others did, knowing that it would pay well and so on. Except his father became ill, though again, I don't know with what, and the family had to uproot again. They went back home to Scotland, and Peter, who had really only ever known the United States, was thrusted into a foreign situation that I'm sure he felt he shouldn't feel like that. Like, it shouldn't feel foreign to him because of his family, but it was in a very real way. He knew his heritage, but being an American would have been all he knew. So what does that do to a kid? Well, it most assuredly affects them in different ways. There is a term, it's called expat child syndrome, expatriate or expat. Being a child that moves countries can be an exciting adventure, but it also comes with unique challenges. Moving to a foreign country, adjusting to new cultures, and making new friends can overwhelm children. And let's keep in mind, as I said, he was the odd man out, so to speak, between his own siblings, in that he had just as much pure Scottish blood, or just whatever you want to call that, as his brother and his sister, but he was still other, just if that makes sense. A study published in the International Journal of Health and Productivity has shown that expat children tend to have higher levels of anxiety, depression, and emotional problems than other children. They often struggle with adapting to new cultures, forming social relationships, and maintaining their self-worth. These challenges can have a lasting impact, highlighting the importance of providing adequate support and care to expat children. But there are also a lot of benefits of moving to other countries in your youth as well. But what made Peter's experience negative, I feel, was that he was bullied for it when the family moved back to their own home country. He was the odd man out. He shouldn't have been treated any differently, but he was, because during his time spent in the United States, he picked up a bit of an American accent. So I'd wager that, again, he felt other than. The same and also wholly different. Left out. Passed over by his own people. And that must have left a scar. So he did what some do. He acted out. He rebelled against how he was treated and shown what we all know as conduct disorder. He was showing conduct disorder. By the age of 10, he was already committing petty crimes. You know, then the family moved down to kind of central England, and he was yet again the odd boy out. Not quite American, not all the way Scottish, and now you're in England, right? So it didn't take him long to start breaking the law again, and was even brazen enough to steal money from a church. This behavior and his getting caught over and over just ensured that he would remain the odd man out. He was sent to boarding schools for troubled youths, right? This environment didn't seem to do anything to reform him, as these facilities often don't, and he would run away. He would be caught, sent to another one, act out, run away, rinse and repeat. And if I may be so bold, in many of those facilities, there are other abuses going on. You know what I mean. Maybe not all. So Peter was assigned basically a probation officer, who later said Peter had the worst juvenile record he had personally seen when Peter was only in his early teens. I believe that statement in his case, though. We don't know if he tortured or killed animals, or at least I could find no evidence of that. My usual sources said no on all three of the McDonald triad, if you will. You know, he didn't abuse animals that I could personally find. I didn't find any accounts of abuse or neglect by his parents. It doesn't mean that it didn't happen in some fashion or another, but it wasn't anything that stood out enough for anyone to disclose. There was zero information about him being mistreated by his parents or anything whatsoever. What we do have is a head injury and two incidents of unconsciousness. That says something. The head injury was to the right side of his forehead. That's the frontal lobe that's responsible for, guys, you can say it with me, planning, problem solving, motivation and judgment, decision making, impulse control, social behavior, memory, learning, rewards. It is crucial and in some way impaired in many dangerous criminals. We see that. But I feel like we have a kid who was, again, the odd man out in his family between his siblings because of him being born in New York and then also his classmates on both continents, honestly. I'm sure they probably had something to say about his Scottish accent when he started American school. Maybe he didn't sound American enough, didn't sound Scottish enough. And I've heard the people that reside somewhere in the middle of cultures do get picked on and picked at by their peers. Which is kind of sad because I love all accents and every form of all of them. We also have a conduct disordered youth well on his way to graduating up to antisocial personality disorder, right? No one's going to argue that. And then suffered a head injury to his frontal lobe and was rendered completely unconscious twice from injury. That pretty much says it all for me, though, again, I'm not like the expert. So let's get back into the story. Now, Peter remained in the Borstal Institute until he was 18 in 1945. With no real place to go, he moved north and back in with his parents in Scotland. Nearly immediately, he broke into a house and he stole only a watch. It was discovered that it was him, so he was arrested, released out on bail. Okay. He then randomly walked up to a young mother and attacked her, brutally beating and kicking her in front of her 3-year-old child. He was fairly easily recognizable in the fact that he was 5 feet 4 inches tall. So 4 days later, Peter attacked a young nurse, beating and kicking her severely. Then the next day, so not even really much of a cooling off period here, he attacked yet another young woman. This time, he knocked her to the ground, grabbed her hair, and slammed her head into the ground. He then R-worded her. He was found and immediately arrested. And as disappointing as it sounds, Peter Manuel was ultimately sentenced to only 6 years in prison for burglary and the R-word. He was released in 1953 when he was 26 years old. He then got a job with the British Railways for 2.5 years, but then was fired when his criminal background came to light. And so, Peter was forced to move back in with his parents again, and he got a job with the Scottish Gas Board, working with his father. And things sound like they might have settled down just a bit for him for just a short while. He did become engaged to a young lady named Anne O'Hara, but it eventually ended due to religious differences. She broke it off for religious differences. But then the same day his engagement ended, Peter kidnapped a young woman, dragged her to a field, and sexually assaulted her. On January 1st, 1956, Peter Manuel finally hit his tipping point. 17-year-old Anne Nealance was waiting at a friend's house for her date to come and take her to a dance. But he wasn't feeling good and decided to walk home, which took her across a golf course. Peter began stalking her. Once he closed in, he grabbed her, knocked her down, and brutally assaulted her. He then bludgeoned her to death with an iron bar. Peter was picked up and questioned about the murder, but his father, of all people, provided him an alibi. So the police moved on. This must have been enough to keep him quiet for a bit, because he did not murder again for 9 months. But as we all know, that was not to last. 30-year-old Peter, on September 17th, 1957, entered the home of 45-year-old Marion Watt. She, her 16-year-old daughter, and Marion's sister were all there. He shot all three of them and killed them. Marion's husband had been on a fishing trip and was arrested for the murders. He was actually put in prison, but he was freed due to lack of evidence. Now, Sidney Dunn was a tax driver, minding his own business when Peter shot and killed him, then dumped his body on moorlands near Northumberland. He then began stalking 17-year-old Isabel Cook as she was walking to a social event. He grabbed her. He R-worded her, and then he strangled her. He buried her body in a shallow grave in a nearby field. In the early hours of January 1st, 1958, Peter Manuel entered the family home of the Smarts and shot all of them dead. Peter then stayed in the house for nearly a week while the bodies were rotting where they lay. He ate leftovers. He even fed their cat. He then stole the family's car and gave a lift to a police officer who was investigating Isabel Cook's disappearance, telling the cop, you know, that he thought police were, you're looking in the wrong places, dude. My man, my guy, you're not looking in the right places. My God. So while the police suspected Peter in the murders, they didn't have any evidence until he used money he had stolen from the Smart home. They were brand new bills, and Peter had been using them in various Glasgow pubs. The police knew they could never get Peter to comply with them, so their tactic was a rather smart one. They arrested his father. So after that, he immediately confessed to all of the murders. So interesting sort of FYI. Peter, the same as our illustrious Ted Bundy, fired his lawyers and defended himself during his trial. The trial itself was apparently a media sensation, as most of them are now. A witness who had just been in a car accident had to be brought in on a stretcher. And just as Bundy's judge had been impressed with his defense, the judge remarked at how well of a job Peter had done in his case. But it wasn't good enough to convince the jury, and he was found guilty on all charges but one due to lack of evidence. On July 11th, 1958, Peter Manuel was hanged. He was only 31 years old. His last words were, and I quote, "Turn up the radio and I'll go quietly," end quote. He was one of the last people to be executed in Scotland. With this additional information, there seems to be some more layers of this onion to peel back. First, I want to address the empathy that he had for his father that got him to confess to his crimes. They arrested his father and he immediately caved. So what does that tell you, my children? To me, it speaks volumes about the love and respect he most likely had for his father. But when we look at his crimes, most of them involved extreme violence and rage towards the women. He even killed a family. So what does that say to you? The respect for the father, but I see some serious anger and resentment towards perhaps his mother. She was the one that wanted to move back to Scotland from the United States. Did Peter and his mother have a strained relationship? It's impossible to tell, at least for me, because I couldn't find anything out about it. But it's plausible. It's, dare I say, probable. But there is some commonality, obviously, when it comes to these men having violence towards women and having a negative relationship with their mother or some important female influence. There is some correlation. So I believe that there just might be something there. Another bit of info I found was that Peter was below average male height. He was 5'4" or 1.62 meters tall, which is still taller than me. Thank you. Appreciate that. Now, we don't body shame anyone on my channels, on my content. Height, weight, we don't do that. I'm not having it. I am a big believer in there are far worse things than being short or full figured, like being an asshole about people who are short or full figured. You get what I'm saying? But this could have affected his self-esteem as well. We can't discount it. We often talk about social media and how it's ruining a lot of people's sense of self because we're all bombarded with content containing women with these very sleek and slim frames, very cat-like and Men with these huge muscles, not my thing, FYI, but we all feel the pressure. We all do. And that kind of pressure was no different back in Peter's day. This is what I've told my kids. The fashions, the hairstyles may change, but, you know, being a young adult and the pressures to conform and look a certain way, that never changes. That cycles through every generation. I feel pretty confident that his shorter stature played in his sense of self, played a role, really. I read plenty of interviews with men in this research talking about how mean women can be about men's heights. While I could be wrong, I feel this could also be a small but contributing factor. And then, of course, the head injury. I mean, there's really no need to over-explain that. We know it likely also was a contributing factor. And perhaps there was just something a little different with his family. I found an article, actually, about his younger sister, Teresa. Come take a walk with me. You're going to love this, right? So without reading the whole article, it basically said that a 24-year-old Labor Party organizer, this man named George Galloway, was busy knocking on doors as politicians did back in the day, and Teresa answered the door. At this point, she was said to be in her early 40s, so this was long after Peter was hanged. Galloway didn't know who she was. This man didn't know. But she had volunteered her living room for some political meetings, which the article said wasn't uncommon in those days. He said, quote, "After a few days, she told me she was Peter Manuel's sister, which was pretty spooky, because when I was about 17, Allison Frew, the sister of his first victim, Anne, was my boss at the Angus Hotel in Dundee, where I worked as a waiter. Then there was my father, who was the only man in the country who believed Manuel was innocent. So I knew a lot about the case." End quote. Small world, huh? So Galloway said that a few days later, quote, "I was alone in the room. She was having a bath, and suddenly the door flew open, and there she was, stark naked. She may have had high heels on. I really didn't notice! Exclamation point. And she threw up her arms and said, 'Will this do you think?' Strange behavior in front of basically a stranger, and especially so during this time, right? Loss of impulse control, or at least less than average, is that running in the family? What did she have going on? I thought it pertinent to share regardless. It's a cute story, but also ick, right? And sources said that Peter himself liked to hear his victims beg, which puts him in the power category. Okay? So, that is Peter's story. What do you think? I really do feel like there's going to be some strain in a very close female relationship, most likely mom. I mean, I can't ask anyone. I can't swear by it or verify it, but that's what I feel. And I feel that he felt, you know, slightly left of everyone in Scotland and slightly right of everyone in the United States. And I think that was a contributing factor, being bullied about his accent, which isn't bullshit because, again, I've heard people talk about how that happens to them. So I know it happens. Head injuries. I think he's just, you know, it's not that the McDonald triad is like a big deal anymore, but the point is that we're not seeing the typical things that come with, you know, severe abuse, severe neglect, you know, whatever, what have you. It doesn't seem like that's really what's going on. So I feel like whatever was going on with him that was pathological. I think it might have been more of a nature thing, but I don't know. What do you think? Leave me a comment. I love seeing the comments. You can DM me on Instagram at @serial_killing. I do at least try to acknowledge everyone if I don't have time to write a paragraph. You can come join us on the Facebook fan page created by a listener. It's Serial Killing, a Podcast fan page. Pretty easy. I'm very active on Instagram and Facebook. And outside of that, guys, thank you so much for listening, because I know you could be listening to anyone else, but you chose me, and I really appreciate that. Thank you so much, guys. Have a great day.
Anybody who killed more than two or three people was a mass murderer. And whether it was all at one place or over an extended period of time, and then in the early 80s, they came up with this differentiation called serial killing.